Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Mike DeRocco.
Oh, yeah, Mike DeRocco. Hey, he's got his own name in there. How about
awesome.
That? Have you had that before?
No, I don't.
We've been holding
so.
That back. You haven't been in all that much with us, you
right.
know?
So wow.
Over the time, if you get here early enough, that's what you get. You get your name mentioned by the big guy. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm fantastic, man. We're 3 weeks out to the draft. Are you up to here with the draft at this point in time? Or are you?
I wish you were here.
Yeah.
I wish you were maybe next week or this week. But I mean, this we go through this every year.
Sure, we do.
You know, it's search for any little bit of nugget at this point, and
right.
you know, and this time of the year is a lot when all the prospects I think seem to get torn down.
Who's the D-Rock wish list guy? Who if you had your druthers and you're running the Jaguars, who do you hope is available to you at number five right now?
Oh, wow. I think it would be Jalen Ramsey one,
okay.
and then Miles Jack probably 1A.
Like everyone else,
yeah,
right?
I mean, it's no different.
And, and I don't mean that as a knock. I mean,
right.
those are seemingly two guys that they could plug in and use immediately.
Absolutely. I mean,
know.
And, you know, after that would be probably Boza. I mean, you know, it's interesting because I think the Jags are really convinced that Fowler is going to be pretty good because I just don't sense that. I just don't sense that they feel like they need to add that elite edge rusher right away. Well, I shouldn't say elite edge rusher. I just don't feel like the sense that they feel like they've got to have that edge rusher. That is the number one need at this point. I think they're pretty convinced Fowler's going to be really, really good, and they like what they did with Gibson and you know, with Sendarek Marks coming back. So that's why I probably would put Bosa three.
But they did make a significant move to try and get Olivier Vernon
this
offseason. How would that have worked out, Mike? Let's say they signed Olivier Vernon and he's got 50-plus million guaranteed coming in. He's got to play a ton, right? I mean, how would the snaps be distributed? I guess you could ask the same thing. Let's say it's Bosa, who is the highest-ranked pure edge rushing defensive
right.
end in the draft. How does it look on opening day or on the important downs for the Jaguars this year?
Well, I think if they had signed Vernon, I think obviously he'll be the first guy you run out there. And then, you know, you work Dante Fowler in a little bit there wherever you can. And then on third down, you have Vernon and Fowler and Jackson and Marks out there.
Pretty good.
And then you go, okay, we're going to get some pressure now. So, you know, I think everyone needs to be careful about Dante Fowler this year. And I think the expectations need to be tempered. I think if Dante Fowler gets between 5 and 7 sacks this year, I think a lot of people are going to look at it as, oh, that's not good. But to be honest with you, that's probably pretty right on where he should be.
Too many defensive ends come into the league and hit double digits.
No,
right
and I've used this stat before, and God bless ESPN stats and information, but I think it's like 12 rookies have recorded double-digit sacks in their first season since 2001. So now he's not a rookie technically, but essentially he is because, you know, he hasn't
sure.
played. So, you know, there's not a lot of guys that have been able to do that. I mean,
only didn't play, didn't get an off season and didn't get anything
right,
yet.
Nothing. He never put a helmet, or excuse me, never put shoulder pads on.
Right.
You know, never put shoulder pads on for the Jaguars. So yeah, he's got some expectations on him that are probably a bit unfair. And I think Gus, I asked Gus about it, down in Orlando, where were we? Boca. I get those things all confused. And I said, is it a little bit unfair maybe what people are thinking about Fowler? And he's like, yeah, pretty much. I mean, we need to temper that, and expectations are what they are. But let's be honest, Fowler, if he gets 5-7 sacks, 8 sacks, you may look at that and go, geez, we need an elite guy. That's pretty good, and that would be a success.
And it depends on what the rest of the line does.
Absolutely.
If you go back to their level of production from 2 years ago, in terms of at least getting to the quarterback, getting the sacks, that's not always indicative of the consistent pressure you're getting or not getting
right.
on any given play. But if they get that sack number back up where it was 2 years ago and Dante Fowler has a half dozen, you may say, all right, room to grow, and
right.
we're already getting better thanks to pressure coming from other areas.
Right, and if you're thinking Malik Jackson's going to have 5 and you think Sendarek's going to have 5 and then, you know, whatever you get out of Jared Odrick, who had a pretty good year rushing the passer last year, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, Dan Scuda's got 3 or 4, then, it doesn't all have to come from one guy. I think everybody wants it to come from, they want one guy to have 15, and who wouldn't? But, it's not necessarily mandated that to rush the passer very, very well to be a good team that rushes the passer, you have to have that one guy that has 15 and everyone else has a few.
All right, D-Rock is in the house with us from ESPN. We had yesterday Blake Bortles appearing on NFL HQ on the NFL Network and supported his guys.
I don't
guys.
Know what that is.
I'm not sure what that is either. But it supported his guys, Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, for the best wide receiver duo in the league. And you hear that and you think, oh, that's a quarterback that's sticking up for his guys. You start to go through the teams out there, and if you're truly looking for the strength that they both bring in a one and a two, I think they're on a very short list of teams with the best wide receiver duos in the league. So today, our Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day is, what are your top three wide receiver duos in the National Football League? See, I assumed everyone, if I just said top one, everyone being a Jag fan is going to vote for the Allens, and that's fine. I've already had people vote for them three times, Mike. See, that's... It's what I deal with on a daily basis.
Well, and good for, I mean, that's what fans do. I get it. Yeah, I mean, look, he's not wrong that they're one of the best duos in the league. Now, you know, is he going to, are they the best? I don't know. Do they have a chance to be? Sure. I mean, I think we saw everything we saw from Allen Robinson leads you to believe that he's going to be a number one receiver in the NFL, which I, you know, not to toot the old horn here, but I was doing something on Channel 4, I think, Sam's show or something like that, last year in the offseason. They said, well, make a prediction. And I said, oh, Allen Robinson will be one of the better receivers in the league. And I was like, oh, okay, well, way to go out on a limb there. So kind of not tooting the old horn. But, yeah, I mean, look, this is a heck of a group that they could potentially have with Rashad Greene, with Mark Keith Lee. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that name. You know, the people get their hopes up. But I mean, if those guys can step up, then maybe you go, okay, maybe they're not the number one duo, but when you look at it collectively, it could potentially be one of the best receiver groups in the league.
You're allowed to say any name you like when you're in here in the Jaguars.
And I really like Mark Keith Lee. He's one of my favorite guys to talk to in that locker room.
He is a good guy. And this is the first time that we've had you here this all season on Jaguars Today. I know you've been on 1010XL. So if folks out there want to get in, you're not going to be here for the entirety of the show, but we'll keep you around as long as you're willing at 641-1010. If folks want to get in with Mike DiRocco on the phone lines, you can do that. You can text us at that number, the text line driven by Duval Ford. Of course, you can tweet at us at MD_1010XL at ESPN DiRocco. Answer the question of the day there. And certainly give a nod to your guys here in Jackson. But what are the top three wide receiver duos in the National Football League? You can also post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page there as well. So we're off and running. Mike DiRocco of ESPN here with us talking Jaguar off season straight ahead on Jaguars Today here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
I think what's cool and what we have here is, you know, kind of a situation where we don't really have a guy in our locker room that's, you know, kind of, you know, snickering behind everybody's back saying, you know, they deserve the ball more, they should get this or they should get that. You know, everybody, they're happy for one another when guys get the ball and make big plays, which is kind of cool to see. You don't see in every locker room. So we're lucky and fortunate to have that. And you know, that makes my job fun. You know, adding Chris Ivory is a huge piece. You know, TJ did a great job last year as a rookie. But, you know, being able to see, you know, firsthand what Chris Ivory can do and how he runs the ball and how violent he is pretty special and definitely going to add something to our team.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Mike Dempsey here with you. Mike DiRocco from ESPN, their NFL Nation correspondent for the Jacksonville Jaguars on the beat. That was Blake Bortles, of course, yesterday on NFL HQ. Mike, the idea a couple of years ago we would have asked about the problem of how are you going to keep all these weapons happy on offense?
Yeah.
That's a nice question to have to answer now, right?
End of 2013, early part of 2014, that question was unthinkable. How are they going to spread the ball around? It just
you got the top two receivers. You mentioned the next two guys who can make plays when they get the ball in their hands. How does Chris Ivory factor into this backfield in your mind with TJ Yeldon, injured in and out of the lineup a little bit last year? They want to take some pressure off him. And certainly the running game with TJ was hurt at the end of the year didn't go anywhere.
No, and I wish I had kept the stat in front of me, but I think he averaged the most snaps of any running back in the league last year.
Really? On the games he was active?
The games he was active. 12 games. I think he averaged almost 40 snaps a game. It was like 39 or something like that. You know, certainly of the guys that played a ton anyway. So, I mean, that's too much. You know, not too much for a rookie. That's just too much for anyone not named Adrian Peterson. And he averaged more snaps per game than Adrian Peterson did. So, you know, he needs some help. And Ivory, I think, is a good compliment. They're, you know, people look at him and say, well, he's big and Yeldon's big. They're not the same kind of runner.
No,
not at all. So, I mean, it's a good change of style. I wouldn't necessarily call it a change of pace. But I do think, you know, I don't know if it's going to be an equitable 50-50 split of carries, but I do think that those guys, like, it wouldn't surprise me if both of them had like 700 to 800 yards rushing each and pretty equitable distribution of carries, you know, 5 touchdowns, maybe 6, 7, 8 between the two of them, something like that. So I think it's going to really help Yeldon. And it does give them somebody that they feel like will be there if it is 3rd and 1 and they want to, you know, run it right up the middle and do whatever. So I think it'll be it's probably the one signing that everyone went, okay, Chris Ivory. And then they're like, yeah, but, you know, didn't get Olivier Vernon, got Malik Jackson, Tashaun Gibson. It's probably a signing that, you know, maybe people started thinking about 3rd, 4th, 5th when they're talking about the Jag signings. But the more I think about it, the more I go, you know what, that may be one of those key signings that didn't get a lot of pub at the beginning and works out really, really well for
them. I think he's perfect compliment to T.J. Yeldon. Actually, he's the one running back I wanted them to sign if they could. And you look at the way they structured the contract. Don't, you know, as Dave Caldwell almost laughed when we talked about, like, it was like a $6 million a year deal. Look at the details. It's really a 2-year deal that they can get out of pretty easily after the first
couple
of years.
Which is what they've done pretty much with all of their free agent guys. I mean, Zane Beatles, I mean, that's sort of the same thing. They put a lot of the guaranteed money up front and then, you know, make it team friendly at the end. So if you need to jettison somebody, it doesn't hurt you.
And we'll go to the phones here momentarily. Tyler just put this in front of me. We're speaking about how far they've come. Can you give me the top 5 wide receivers on the Jaguars depth chart opening the 2013 season?
Oh, jeez.
God bless you if you can, by the way. So I'm not expecting you to bat 1,000 on this.
All right. Cecil.
Cecil the Diesel.
Mike Brown.
Mike Brown, very solid. Here's where it goes off the rails.
Yeah, hang on here. It's Kerry Taylor?
Nope. What's our source on this, Tyler, by the way?
This was the Jaguars officially released depth chart to open the preseason in 2013.
Oh, okay. Preseason.
2013. Oh, that throws everything.
No, it's like 3 years ago and yet so far, so long ago.
Let me give them to you. Muhammad Massaqua.
Oh, right. See, I wasn't here for the beginning of preseason in 13.
Is that what it was?
So he was already gone by the time I got here.
He was cleared out. Jeremy Ebert and Tony Clemens, though. I mean, just think of that. I mean, Cecil Shorts, when healthy, is a solid guy in the league. On this roster right now, at best, he'd be the 3, as presently constituted.
Probably, yeah.
You know, I think Robinson and Hearns, with their play over the last 2 years, have put themselves ahead of him. And then, you know, be on any given weekend a competition on who the 3rd guy would be. And then it gets progressively worse from that point on. 6-4-1-10-10. Mike DiRocco is here from ESPN. We don't have him in every day or every week for that matter. So if you want to talk draft with Mike, you want to talk free agency, the offseason, what this team needs to do to keep the coaching staff in place. Dave Caldwell, what does he need to have get accomplished this year for Shad Khan to remain happy with him? Whatever you have for Mike DiRocco, bring it to the table at 6-4-1-10-10. To Gainesville we go. It's not a Gator question, I don't believe, Mike. Short Dog, our boy
Will Greer.
What's up, Short Dog? How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Hey, man, if I can't text or call, I'm always listening.
We appreciate it, man.
Yeah, I drive trucks, so I have to take a little break. But love the show. But I know we talk a lot about Linder moving to center, and I know they got Prince Mukamura, whatever the heck his name last
year. Yeah, you hit that pretty well. That was pretty good.
If you're the Jags, and, you know, when the second round gets there, I think we got the 38th pick. If you're the Jags, and you have a choice out of the Alabama center, Ryan Kelly, or the cornerback from Clemson, Mackenzie Alexander, which one would you, you got to choose one. Which one would you choose, and
all
why
right.
would you choose? And I'll take your comment off the air.
All right, Short Dog. Keep it on the road, man. What's going on, Mike? Who do you if you have to choose between Ryan Kelly and Mackenzie Alexander, who's a better fit?
You know what? I'm still not convinced that the offensive line is going to be significantly better yet. I think it's, you know, if they move Linder to center, that's fine. Then you're trying to figure out who's going to be your other guard, whether it's the loser of the Beecham-Jokel thing, whether it's Bernardo, whether it's Shatley or somebody else. I probably would go – I might take the center. I think I would, Ryan Kelly.
I think that way
I know I've got – if you're convinced he's going to be pretty good, that way I know I've got three really good guys in the middle. You run the ball with those two, with those three guys in the middle.
And I think Parnell's pretty good too.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't have any questions about right tackle. Yeah.
Right. So, I think now you're talking about a pretty potentially really good offensive line. I don't know if Ryan Kelly's going to be there, but in this hypothetical, And again, as I discussed with Dan Hicken right before you came on, if you caught that I know Ryan Kelly from what the pundits tell me. I'm not breaking down college offensive linemen, right? But the guy won the Remington Award as the best center, played at, you know, obviously a high level at Alabama. And so, you know, you assume that if the guys are right and this guy's the best at his position, it's certainly a position they could stand upgrading here. If they don't go that way, if they don't bring in somebody who profiles as a starting lineman at any position, what is your best guess to how that other spot will work out? We don't know how healthy Beecham is going to be, but let's say Beecham beats Jokel out, first of all, okay, for left tackle. You know that Linder, Can, and Parnell are starting in whatever combination.
Right.
Who do you think Jokel would have the inside edge? Do you like the idea of him playing guard? Do you think Shatley, who, you know, Jeff Logman raves about just the pure strength of a guy like Tyler Shatley, and, you know, that's one of the biggest qualities you're looking for in a guard. What do you see that competition playing out as?
I think Jokel will get a look there. And I think, you know, when you watch Jokel, when he's had problems in pass protection, it's been the quicker guys that are getting around on him on the edge a little bit. And there's not – pass blocking as a guard is a lot different than pass blocking as a tackle. You've got guys on both sides of you. You've got a little bit of help there. You know, I think they'd give him a look there. I don't know. It's very rare for a guy to go to tackle to guard. Like, in a guy that you picked number two overall to go from tackle to guard. So, you know, the thing, and I respect Jeff a lot. Jeff Loggeman's stuff a lot because I think he really knows the game, obviously, and he's great to listen to. My only question about Shatley is, if he's so good, why hasn't he been able to get on the field?
I totally agree. Why wasn't he playing last year when they were struggling to run the ball and Beatles clearly wasn't the long-term answer at the position?
And it's the same thing, and I know that they really like Josh Wells here. Well, I mean, if they're so good and you're so high on them, you know, why haven't they been on the field?
Percentage chance, before we get back to the phones here, percentage chance that they pick up Jokel's fifth-year option on his rookie deal?
10%.
Okay. Yeah, so we'll let him play it out and see where it goes. It doesn't mean you can't re-sign him somewhere down the line.
Right, let me say, if he shows up and he has a bang-up camp and he wins that job and he looks really, really, really good, then I say that's probably better than 50-50. If he shows up.
But in the deadline for the
oh, that's right. Yeah, it's May 3rd. It's May 3rd. May 3rd. Yeah,
my bad.
Yeah, sorry. I forgot about that. Yeah. So yeah. It's May 3rd. So yeah, I wouldn't do it if I were the Jags at this point, but I would open up if he shows up and he has a really great camp and he wins it and he looks really, really good, then I'd start. You
talking
know,
about a new
contract. Exactly.
As it's been pointed out to us, AJ Can is actually older than Luke Jokel.
Yeah, which is really, really funny when
it is,
think about that. But, you know, but that's a situation that happens all over the league. I mean, you get guys that come in as true juniors and they come out, they're going to be young.
Yep.
You know, so I mean, that's not an excuse. It shouldn't be an excuse 3 years in.
Right.
Year one, maybe year two, but 3 years in, it shouldn't be an issue.
All right, back to the phones we go. Thank you for the call, Short Dog. Jason in San Marco, you're next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for opening up the phones. It's good to ask you this question because it's been bothering me for a while. It's sort of a hypothetical question, and I will take your commentary off the air, but I'm wondering how it is that New England Patriots, year in and year out, get a very late first-round draft choice and always put on the field incredibly competitive teams. My hypothesis is that Belichick does a better job of evaluating talent and also that he works harder during the 7 months when the teams are not playing games to get ready for the season. I would like to know your opinion on that and whether you think there is a lot of importance during these months when there are no games to the success of the franchise overall. Thank you again.
Okay. Mike, you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, I think Belichick's not perfect. He's missed on guys. So let's just throw that out
Let's start with the quarterback position. They haven't had a question about that in 15 years.
Exactly. And he is one of the better defensive minds. And I think the thing that Belichick is really, really good, I think, in finding out what his guys do well and not asking them to do things that they don't do well. He says, if this guy fits here, has a specific role, let's use him in that. And I think that way you can get away with maybe not having as much, you know, A-list talent as other teams might need. But, they're not perfect. But the biggest reason why they're good every year is, is Tom Brady. I mean, that helps.
I think Belichick is probably the best coach in the National Football League, okay?
Right.
And I don't think I maybe shouldn't even qualify that, but I am going to. I don't think he outworks everybody.
No,
he's better at what he has a better mind for, or like you said, as a more of a knack for putting guys in positions to succeed. He has a base of outstanding talent led by the quarterback position. So I don't think it's a case that Gus Bradley's not working hard enough in the offseason, like that. If Belichick had coached his team last year, okay, instead of Gus Bradley, everything else went the same. Obviously, maybe not the outcomes because he would be making in-game decisions. What impact on the record would there have been here in Jacksonville, in your opinion?
I think they could have been at least a 500 team.
I think that would have been a several game difference, right?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, why are you paying Bill Belichick big money, right? I mean, if he's not worth three games to you in the standings compared to a team that's picking in the top five for the umpteenth straight year, then what's the big hubbub about? Because again, we've had this debate, and some people who I really respect said, maybe a game. Are you kidding me? Then why would you even ever consider firing a coach if he has that little impact?
Well, he would have been limited by by the personnel.
No question.
But would they have made some different adjustments on defense throughout the season? Yeah, I think I'm pretty confident in saying that they probably would have done some stuff differently on defense, especially maybe even getting to the passer. At some point, there's coaching does matter, and I'm not saying that Gus did a ridiculously terrible job. I don't think he did. I mean, I said this the other day. I still think, the roster limitations here, and I don't think anyone can say definitively, honestly, how good or how not good of a coach he is. I think this year we'll be able to look at him and say, okay, this is the best team he's had. Let's evaluate him at this point. But, Belichick, I mean, I can't imagine that this team
with you.
Robinson.
8-18.
Very
easily, I think, last year, if that were the case. All right. Thank you for the call, Jason. Let's get one more in before we break. Mike DeRocco here with us on Jaguars today. Eric in Ponte Vedra is next up on 1010XL. Good morning, Eric.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Great, man. What's up?
Good. Hey, I've been a Jaguar fan for a long time, and we've been patching our offensive line up for the longest time. I say we go all in on Tunsil. Get him in here. He'd be like a Smith for the Cowboys. Look how good their offensive line is. No questions there. Let's just get it done. Get Tunsil in here and let's shore up that offensive line. I don't care who.
So you're advocating a trade up to get him.
Let's get some draft. Yeah, let's get some draft picks away and get Tunsil in here. He's a once in a lifetime talent, and I think you'd shore up that offensive line for sure. No questions asked.
All right, thanks for the call, Eric. I don't think he's necessarily a once-in-a-lifetime talent, but he's
pretty darn good.
Cream of the crop, right. No question about it. I'm not saying he wouldn't be an upgrade. I don't think there's a prayer of a chance that scenario actually happens, right?
There,
and especially when you're dealing in the division, Tennessee's going to want to make you pay through the nose if you're moving up to number one.
Yeah.
And that's what we're presuming, unless for some reason, let's say, that Ramsey went number one, and then maybe you start talking to Cleveland about Tunsil. But let me ask you this. Where would you put Tunsil in amongst Jack and Ramsey and Bosa? If they were all available to you in this draft, where does Tunsil fit in?
If I'm drafting for the Jags?
Mm-hmm. Is he behind all three of those defensive players?
Yeah, honestly. I mean, he is a great talent, but drafting Laremy Tunsil, I don't necessarily know. That makes you better at left tackle. But does it make you better everywhere else along the offensive line? I mean, I guess theoretically, because the left tackle spot is better, the offensive line will be better. But does that impact what you do at center? Probably not. You're not going to take Jokel and move him to center. You're still looking at the same question of, okay, all right, now we have our left tackle. Who's our left guard? Who's our center?
Sure.
So, I mean, if I needed a left tackle, well, absolutely. If I were the Titans, I'd take him.
Yeah, I
absolutely.
Would too.
I mean, look.
I think ultimately
great.
That's what
I got my quarterback. I got my left tackle. we're good. Let's go. Now we're okay. I've got Taylor Lewan at right tackle. I feel really good about that. Let's go.
I got the genius of Mike Mularkey
orchestrating.
Right,
you have
things.
No idea.
All right, D-Rock's here.
No idea what he's cooking up.
Let's take a break right now. We got about a six-way tie at the top of the leaderboard at Augusta National, and all you need to know is that Tom Watson is among those at one under right now, leading the Masters 30 years after Jack pulled it off at the age of 46. Tom Watson, what's he pushing, 70 these days? Mid-60s at least, right? When he almost won the British? Going back
he's getting a senior coffee in
66
McDonald's.
Years
that
old.
I do know.
66 years old today, and he picked up his senior coffee. Holy cow, that was a monster of a cockroach that just came around the corner there. I'll just be honest with you. I think it came from Joe Fortunato's personal collection. And D-Rock's got the shoe off, ladies and gentlemen. He is slaying the beast, and hey, you never know what's going to happen. It's the curse of the construction ongoing down here at Everbank to make your game day experience that much better. Mike Dempsey and Mike DiRocco here with you. It's Jaguars today. Back with more of your calls next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
I mean, I already knew pretty much everybody. I was with them at the Senior Bowl. I already knew everybody was like, good guys. A lot of energy here. Like, everybody's up tempo, and like, I just feel a lot of energy in this place.
Now, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
That's Noah Spence. People love him, so Noah Spence. I don't know if you get this as much as I get this, D-Rock. People love him, so Noah Spence around these parts. He's mythic.
He's low LT, apparently.
Right, he's the next LT. He's better than LT, and he's LT and J.J. Watt rolled into one.
By the way, has anyone ever finished a visit with the Jags and spent any time around Gus Bradley and not said, boy, there's a lot of energy around here, building?
It's true, though. You know, and I'm sure it's not the case everywhere you go. Miles Jack said something about, man, what a great, this is one of the newer facilities I've been in. And I thought, they must have taken him to the locker room, right? Right. I think that is a testament, though, to the work that he's done to, you know, I'm sure they walk him out, show him the field, and they're like, wow, that's pretty, maybe not what I expected coming from the West Coast. I haven't, you know, watched a whole lot of Jaguar football.
They apparently expect a high school stadium.
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean,
oh, you're going to hate it when you go out
there. NFL, pal. I mean,
right. Right. But even though I'm assuming he's taken a lot of visits to different places. Look, if he gets drafted fifth, he's coming here whether he likes it or not.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So you're not recruiting.
We play in a gym. Too bad you're playing for.
By the cabby on the text line, driven by Duval Ford, cabby says, do you guys know who Tiger Woods beat to win his last major at the U.S. Open? His answer was Michael DiRocco Mediate. So he's trying to blend it all together.
There we go. Did he spell DiRocco right?
No, he did not.
Okay,
he did
that's
not.
Good.
But
that's
okay.
I appreciate the attempt, though.
Thought that counts.
Absolutely.
I got several questions in today, and we're about to go to the phones because this will dovetail with what I believe Jerome wants to talk about. Here's just two as an example that since we started the program this morning. Have I just convinced myself, or do you think if Noah Spence falls past the 25th pick range, Dave Caldwell would jump up to grab him? Maybe wishful thinking, but I think it's a real possibility with the offseason mentality that we've had. And also, hey guys, your thoughts on Noah Spence and possibly being available in the second round for the Jaguars. So we do get a lot of that. So let's go to Jerome, who also has a question, I believe. Oh no, actually his question's not about Spence, but Justin's is. We'll get to him in a second. Jerome, you're on Jaguars today. Go ahead, buddy.
Hey, how y'all doing this morning?
Good. What's up?
And my question is, being your, like, year four, and now that you have, like, pieces on the defense to consider this, like, let's say a more veteran defense, like back in the day of Jack Del Rio, now you're only, like, a piece or a couple pieces away that you can address in the draft, and with the offense primed to go for this, I mean, they're primed to explode any season, any year now. Do you believe that if they don't, like, make this run for the division or make the playoffs, let's say if you go 9-7 and you miss the playoffs, do you blame that on personnel or do you blame that on coaching, or 8-8 and you just flat out lose or win? Let's say if you go 8-8 and you win, or 9-7 and you lose, how can you justify what is personnel and what is the coaching?
I think you'd have to see it play out, Mike. Yeah. I mean, that's a question. You can't we can't know what would be the cause of that. I could see scenarios where coaching could cost you some games with bad decisions. You can see scenarios where they play the wrong personnel. You can also see scenarios where guys just don't play up to the caliber that you think they're capable of. But I'll say this. If they go 9-7 and they don't make the playoffs.
That's a win. That's a victory. That's
right.
That's a
not
good year.
They're not going to be complaining about
that. No, that's a year that, you know, okay, yeah, it sucks you don't make the playoffs, but that's the progress that you finally expected to see, that you wanted to see in 2014.
What do you think's the number for Shad Khan? Does he have one? He's not going to share it with us, and he may not have a specific number in mind, because it does matter. You know, how did you get there? Did you lose your quarterback and you still managed to win a bunch
right.
of games?
Yeah,
you know,
I don't necessarily think that he has a number in mind. I think because it's hard to say that. It's hard to sit there and say, I want Gus to win 9 games, okay? And then if you say that, or if that's in your head, and then in week 7, Blake goes down for a month, you know, and then you lose 4 games,
right.
And then...
Or what if you miss 8 games and your kicker misses
right,
2 potential
exactly.
game winners?
You don't... You having a specific number, as much as us in the media want to have him say that so we can write it, and as much as fans want to know, if they don't win 8, this guy's gone... I just don't think you can do that. I think he says he wants a winning record, but honestly, if they finish 8-8, maybe even 7-9, depending on the circumstances, maybe there aren't any changes,
right?
Coaching wise. But look, he's just like all the fans. He wants a winning record. He wants his team to make the playoffs. He wants to make a Super Bowl run. So, you know, it's interesting. Somebody asked him. It may have been Ryan. I'm not really sure I can't remember, down in at the owners' meetings at Boca Raton, someone asked him about the patience of sticking with Gus Bradley. And the thing of it is I found this interesting that Shad said it's not patience, it's the plan that they've had in place. You know, when they first hired Gus and when they first hired Dave, that this was the plan that they all had in place. So he doesn't view it as patience. Now, if 2 or 3 years from now things aren't going well, then he may say, yeah, I'm out of patience. But he doesn't view it as, I've had so much patience with Gus and with Dave at this point. So I thought that was interesting.
While fans' expectations, you're going to hear a lot of 9-7, 10-6, or bust, right?
Right.
When Dave Caldwell said after the season, not really holding the first 2 years against Gus
right.
Bradley, that kind of, to me, that moved the timetable a little bit around to the point where I think 8-8, Gus is safe, depending on, again, how, if you're 8-4 and you have a collapse down the stretch or whatever, there are scenarios. It's not 100% set, but I think 8-8 is a pretty safe bet that there's not a major changing of the
right.
guard.
I would
here.
Agree with that. Yeah, there's a lot of ways to go 8-8.
Definitely, right?
Yeah.
And 8-8 winning the division, I don't care what the record is. You win the division, you're good. If you make the playoffs under any scenario, I think you're good.
Yeah, 9-7 may win you the division.
In May.
In here, yeah. So, I mean, yeah.
It looked like 6-10.
Right. At one point.
Let's go to Justin in Atlanta next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Justin. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Great. What's good. Up, buddy?
Hey, Mike DiRocco, question.
Okay.
Last week, I gave my thoughts on what it would take to get either Ramsey or Jack at 5 and then to come up and get Mance in the first round, too. I was wondering what you think it would take to get to do that.
You know, I don't have the Jimmy Johnson trade calculator in front of me. I think that, you know, in order to come up into that end of the first round, you're going to have to give up a second-round pick.
Obviously,
your second-round
right.
pick. You might have to give up a 4th or a 5th.
I think you might have to give up more than that. You know, if you're sitting there at 38, let's say you need to make it to 28. Okay, just
10 spots,
10,
yeah.
10 spots,
yeah,
right?
You're giving up your second.
Actually, it's 12 spots, right? Is really what it is. With New England not having a
pick, right,
it's 11
right,
spots.
Right.
So let's call it a dozen spots. And that's basically what you're talking about here, coming up from 38. You're not sitting there at 33. It's going to cost you more than a 4th or a 5th, I think. I think it could
maybe
cost you
both.
It could
a
cost
second,
you
a
second a and a third.
And a
it could
yeah.
t- or a second and a 4th and a 5th. There could be,
yeah.
you know, a second and a second the following year. It could be a lot of different scenarios.
Yeah, I don't know if I make that deal.
I don't know if I do either, but if you love that guy, and here's the thing that Dave Caldwell said pretty consistently, I'd rather have one great guy than 3 good guys,
right.
right? And they haven't had the opportunity to do that. And I think the roster's at a spot, Mike, 3 years ago, give me a bunch of good guys, because we don't have
right.
many good guys.
I now need as many players
you
as I can.
You feel like
get,
you've
yeah.
got a better base of talent overall. Maybe you could be a little bit more aggressive, but He has been aggressive, but more trading up from, say, the third round into the second round kind of range.
I agree with that. And I don't think I make that deal. You know, there's some decent pass rushers in this draft. And I think that they're, like I said, I think at the beginning, that they're pretty sold on Fowler, and they're pretty, you know, they're happy with Malik Jackson and Sendera coming back. I'm just leery. I still think that they still need more good players. And if you're giving up your second and a fourth and a fifth for a guy like Spence, I mean, he's a risk. There's a reason that he's being talked about as, you know, dropping down in the draft.
Sure.
Because, you know, there are a lot of people who believe he's the best pure pass rusher in the draft, even better than Bosa. So he's a risk. And are you willing to assume that risk if you're the Jaguars? I personally, at this point, where I am in the rebuild of this franchise, I don't think I'm ready to assume that risk at this point.
What will you be doing in terms of coverage for the draft for yourself? Will you be here with the Brain Trust on draft night?
Well, I'll be here. Yeah, we've got something really cool that we're going to do. We did it last year. All 32 of us NFL Nation writers did a mock draft last year, and we did it. I think they ran it like 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We are doing it Tuesday before the draft, prime time, 7 o'clock.
Nice.
Yeah.
Just the first round?
Yeah, God almighty.
So 31 of you then will get together.
Well, actually it's less because we don't have a Bucks guy, and I'm subbing for the Bucks guy, and we don't have a Raiders guy, so someone else is subbing. So does it make 29 of us?
All right.
Or something like 20 or 30 of us?
But you'll go through the first round on that Tuesday.
Right, yeah. And it'll be live prime time, so that's going to be really cool. And then I'll be here, obviously, on Thursday for the draft, and we've got some pre-draft stuff planned. And some historical look back stuff at the draft as well, like the best draft class in franchise history. We're doing something, and then, you know, something on the worst draft class in franchise history as well. So
got a few
contenders. Yeah, the best draft pick ever in franchise history, which, well, it's got to be Tony, right? I mean,
I don't know. It depends on how you define it, right? I mean, certainly Tony is Hall of Fame caliber,
right?
So he that's as good as you can do. So I guess by that token, anywhere you take him, he could be argued to be the best draft pick. But, you know, we did a thing last week talking about who are the best draft values. You know, a guy like Rob Meyer, who he got in the seventh round and went on to be a significant contributor for a number of years as part, you know, of a key member of the three-man rotation with Henderson and Stroud. You know, there are different ways. Maurice Jones-Drew in the second round, you know, certainly a better value, but didn't have the peak that Pacelli had with the five Pro Bowls and all that. So, hey, it's just fun for discussion.
Yeah, it's a lot of good stuff there. And then, you know, we'll obviously hit the draft pretty hard on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But I actually prefer being here than in, like, Chicago or anything.
Yeah, I'm going to Chicago this year. I can go either way. You know, last year was the first year I did it, and I'm doing live shows during the draft. So
that's
fun.
Yeah,
it's got plenty of stuff to talk about. It's all built in, you know what I mean? So that'll be good stuff. Mike DeRocco, check him out on Twitter, at ESPN DeRocco, and, of course, on those digital pages of ESPN.com as the NFL Nation correspondent for your Jacksonville Jaguars. D-Rock, good to see you, brother.
Thank you for having me.
Hope you enjoy your off season. Enjoy the next few weeks before the draft, and I'll see you out there for some mini camps and OTAs and the like.
Yeah, hopefully we won't be having to cover what we covered last year on the first day of mini camp.
Goodness, seriously. Let's knock on wood or whatever else you need to. Mike DeRocco, folks, let's do it again. Don't be a stranger, okay?
All right, I appreciate it. Thanks, Mike.
You got it, buddy. Mike DeRocco of ESPN back with This State in Football and the Honda Drive Around the NFL on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, This Date in Football History.
All right, dig it. This Date in Football History, April 7th. Let's go back to 1943. The NFL adopted the free substitution rule. It was actually done due to roster shortages because of World War II. Before that, there were limits on how many players could substitute on any given play. The free substitution rule is just like it sounds. You can sub in as many people. You can sub in all 11 if you want to and sub out all 11 as long as they check in properly with the referee. That rule came into being in 1943, went away after World War II shortly, and then was permanently reinstalled shortly thereafter. This date in 1985, New Jersey General Herschel Walker ran for a USFL record 233 yards for the New Jersey Generals. That happened in 1985 on April 7th. Birthdays for this date, some really big ones. Tony Dorsett, born on this date in football history, four-time Pro Bowler and a Hall of Fame inductee in 1994. Tony Dorsett, 62 today. Steve Wisniewski. That would be the uncle of Stefan Wisniewski, the former Jaguar now. 8-time Pro Bowler and a 2-time first-team All-Pro. How many Pro Bowls do you need to get you into the Hall of Fame? Apparently 8's not enough, as Wisniewski has only been a semifinalist once. Ricky Waters, NFL running back for the Eagles, 5-time Pro Bowler. Eagles, 49ers, and maybe one or two others. But Ricky Waters once scored 5 touchdowns in a playoff game. Also alligator arm to ball. And to his eternal discredit, said, hey, what am I going to do, go out there and get hurt in a losing effort? I think that's the one he'd like to have back, Ricky Waters. One of my favorite people to interview in football over the years, turns 47 years old today. And the twins, Rondé and Tiki Barber, both born on this day. Tiki, a 3-time Pro Bowler. Rondé made it 5 times, including 3 appearances on the first-team All-Pro list. They were born in 1975, and they turned 41 years old today. And that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Well, Mike, I named it in the said it in the local sports update there. Former Jaguar safety Reggie Nelson is headed to rejoin Jack Del Rio squad, joining the Oakland Raiders. 2-year contract worth up to $12 million. That, according to NFL insider Ian Rappaport. Yesterday on the NFL HQ show, Elliot Harrison and former Raven Chris Canty were discussing the AFC South earlier this week, and they named their very early AFC South MVPs for next season.
AFC South offensive MVP. Elliot, I'm going to start with you. Who do you have bringing home that honor?
You know what? I'm going with Marcus Mariota.
Really?
I'm putting a lot of confidence in the guy. Yeah, I feel like, you know, last year his career got a little bit, well, not career, you know, his first year in the league, but his first year got a little off track when he got injured against the Miami Dolphins. But this guy played really well, threw twice as many touchdowns as interceptions, which is fantastic for a rookie quarterback. How much help did he have? And then what he can do right here. He only ran the ball 34 times, but look how fast this guy is. I was shocked
He
did not run as much. And Chris, you know, when you have a running quarterback on defense, you're playing 11 on 11, not 11 on 10, because you have to worry about that quarterback keeping the ball.
Yeah, it definitely brings another element to the game. I like Mariota, but I think he's a couple of years away from getting that MVP of the division. But I'm going to go with Blake Bortles. I'm going to say it again. I like what the Jacksonville Jaguars are building down there, and he progressively gets better with each season. I saw him in 2014 when we played against him, and I was impressed then. He beat us in 2015. He just continues to make plays. He can make all the throws, and all the guys around him believe in him. The organization is doing a great job of surrounding him with a great supporting cast.
So some nice words there from former Raven Chris Canty. Steelers running back D'Angelo Williams thinks that Bengals linebacker Vontaze Burfict's nasty hit on wide receiver Antonio Brown cost Pittsburgh a Super Bowl run. Williams told ESPN.com's Jeremy Fowler on Wednesday, "For me, my rival throughout my year this year will be the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't think there was any doubt in my mind if AB was not interfered on or hit the way he was hit, however you want to label it. There's no doubt we go on to give the Broncos hell." Just a month prior to that game, by the way, Brown did destroy Pro Bowl corner Chris Harris. 16 catches for AB, 189 yards, and a pair of touchdowns. The Steelers did beat the Broncos 34-27. And finally here, Mike, the last story in the Honda Driver on the NFL. No more beast mode in Seattle. The running back Thomas Rawls is the current lead guy in Seattle. And he said he plans to be ready for camp after his rookie season was cut short by an ankle injury. But last week, the Seahawks running back said he had yet to start running. In an interview with KCPQ-TV, the running back said he believes he's recovering rapidly. "I'm just taking it day by day. I'm getting better. I'm walking on my own. I'm doing a lot of good things. My recovery is coming very quickly. So I'm looking forward to being out there very soon." He rushed for 830 yards, averaged 5.6 yards a carry, the highest of any back with 100 carries. And he only had 6 weeks, really, where he was the full-time guy in Seattle getting all the carries there, Mike.
Yeah, you know, I'm not convinced that he'll be the lead guy in Seattle. I'm not convinced they won't draft a guy. And Kristen Michael is back there. That's not exactly daunting for Thomas Rawls. He'd been on that roster before.
I believe they had Derrick Henry in for a visit recently.
They have had Derrick Henry in. And look, you're talking about a guy who's an undrafted free agent. Not only did he break the ankle, he had tendon damage in his ankle, or ligament damage in the ankle as well. That's why it's taken so long for him to get fully recovered. But we'll see. He's certain, put it this way, if he is cemented as the starting running back in Seattle, he's no worse than a second round pick in fantasy leagues in 2016. We'll put it that way. Chris Canty, I like what he had to say. Although I find it amusing that Blake Bortles, what did he say, Tyler? Something about he's getting progressively better every year. He's played two seasons, right? So that what you're saying is year two is better than year one? Is that what you're saying?
That okay. would be an accurate statement.
That would be an accurate statement, but he makes it seem like he's been in the league for 5 years and every year is just built on the last one. If he, I think what he's saying is he's projecting yet another leap forward, and that's great. And I find it fascinating that here we are after one bad season, injury marred, and a poor play when he was healthy, that you're talking about two guys, respected NFL guys, talking up two different quarterbacks in the division as potential MVP candidates, and neither one is Andrew Luck. So that's pretty cool to see. More cool from Chris Canty's point of view. I've said this before. Elliot Harrison's a friend of mine, and I think he does a phenomenal job. And I'm sure there'll be people say, "Oh, you know, what does he know about the league?" And I've mentioned this a few times in recent weeks on the show. He actually goes back in the offseason every year. And he has access to all the NFL archives working for NFL.com and NFL Network. And he goes back and he picks a season, say it's 1983, and he will watch every game in that season, you know, condensed. He'll watch all the plays in that game, watch the film starting in week one, to watch all the week one games. And then he'll watch the season progress through his those eyes and, you know, just keeps him, refreshes him on football history and, you know, just – it's not a case of just going on what other people said about these players. He's been doing this for years, so he really takes it very seriously. He's probably trying to be a little bit provocative as well, going with a second-year guy in Marcus Mariota. But who knows? Stranger things have happened. I like Canty's selection better. This dovetailing on what Mike DiRocco and I were talking about before he left a few minutes ago, you know, we're talking about what is the goal for the Jags this year in terms of a win-loss record and the fans' reaction may be different than the organization's reaction. And look, at 9-7, I don't think there's a chance. I say not a chance. Let's say they're 9-0 and they go 0-7 down the stretch. There's always a chance, but put it this way, 99% likelihood that 9-7 will keep you around, your coaching staff around. This one on the text line, driven by Duval Ford, says, quote, "Nothing less than a winning record and the playoffs are acceptable. 3 years of underachieving is enough." Okay. That's, you can say that, and that's fine, and that can be your prerogative, and you can stand with that no matter what. I say, what if they go 10-6 and miss the playoffs? It's happened. All right, teams have done that. That's a winning record. What if they go 9-7 and just miss the playoffs? What if they go 8-8 and make the playoffs? That would not be a winning record and the playoffs. Is there no wiggle room in that? That's the issue. You can make these declarative statements, and maybe you're going to stand by them, but I think a lot of it has to do not just with the ultimate record, but how it was attained and the path to that record and what were the ups and downs and the setbacks that they had to overcome and how, you know, good of a job do they do overcoming those. For instance, as Mike pointed out, what if you have 7 wins and you've with 6 games to go and you lose your quarterback for a month, something like that. You know, you've got to factor these things in. But hey, you don't have to, I suppose. If you are a fan, you can feel however you like about your football team. Also on the text line, get a defensive end and a linebacker in the first 2 picks. How about, I think I've been getting this one quite a bit and we haven't just referenced it yet, and that's why I keep getting the same one here. How about a combo of Miles Jack and Shalik Calhoun with the first 2 picks, or Joey Bosa and Joshua Perry, then go interior offensive line in the 3rd round? And he's talking about Perry as being rated as one of the most productive linebackers in the last 2 years, one of the most underrated players in the draft, according to at least one of the draft profiles out on him. That's fine. I'd have no problem if they come away with a linebacker and a defensive end. Me personally, I'm not going to go into the draft saying I have to get a linebacker and a defensive end in the first couple of picks. I'm well aware what my needs are, and I'm well aware what the Jags' needs are, and they're going to stack their board, and they're going to take into account in stacking that board the positions of need and, you know, how much that factors in. But you've also got to take the best players, and it's a combination of the best player that fits what you need at that given time. So I'm not going to sit here and say, wow, I'm definitely going this direction. What if Miles Jack and Joey Bosa are off the board and Jalen Ramsey is there in the 1st round? Do you not take Jalen Ramsey because you want to go defensive end linebacker as a combo? Do you then reach for somebody at that point in time? I just think you got to have a little bit of flexibility built into it. But if they come away with something like Miles Jack and Shalik Calhoun, I don't think too many people are going to be all that upset.
Quick question,
about
Mike.
That combination. Yes, sir.
Former Jaguar, we talked about it there in the update, and the Honda drive, Reggie Nelson going to Oakland. He was rated as one of PFF's, actually it was PFF's 9th best safety last year, an 84 grade. And he only got 2 years, $12 million. So what took him so long to sign a deal? Was he asking for too much money? Like, what was the deal with him? Does he have much left in the tank or what?
Well, he had a great year last year, led all safeties and interceptions, and I think the question is, was that the aberration year? You know, he played better in Cincinnati than he played here in Jacksonville, and we've talked a lot about it in the way that they used him more as kind of a single high safety center fielder type, go find the football and not have to think about it too much. And here in Jacksonville, it was not that cut and dried. They used him in different ways, and quite frankly, the more you make Reggie Nelson think on the football field, the less he's going to be able to play fast. He is a player who needs to play instinctively, and I think that's borne out over his time in Cincinnati. Jack Del Rio obviously was here when Reggie was here, so they're going to reunite out in Oakland, and you know, that's one of those deals that, hey, the Jags got their guy in early, and they, I think, in fact, love the fact that you're talking about Deshaun Gibson's, what, 26 years old? That's the big difference, I think, in their eyes. They think he can play at a high level continuing forward for a long period of time. Reggie Nelson, have you just seen the best season he's ever going to turn in? Odds are yes. Odds are he's not going to have the best season of his career at the age of 32 and then top it immediately at 33 or 34 years old. So still a solid player, no doubt. And, you know, isn't it funny we talk about $6 million is missing out on the good money? Oh, man, what a life. No question about that. We'll take a timeout. John Osher is going to join us in studio for the latest from Jaguars.com. That is coming up next. It is Jaguars Today, and you're welcome to get on board. 641-1010, both the phone line and the text line, driven by Duval Ford, right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, Johnny O's in the house, and Bernd Wiesberger still leads the Masters. I'm sure that's who you had in the Jaguars pool for the Masters. Wiesberger, is that your guy?
Yeah, it is. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
Adam,
Jordan Spieth.
After an
that's
early
what I say with golf.
Spieth is one under and has not had the best year. Broke his favorite driver yesterday.
Whenever anybody asks me about golf, I just say his name really loud.
Jordan Spieth.
Yeah.
Yes, he is one under par, so he's one off the lead in the early going. They say the wind will howl this afternoon. Tyler, do we get a hold of Fat Tony? Have we had a report on the par three?
Okay,
contest
Mike,
yet?
You know that if we text Mike or if we text Tony at any time, we're not going to get a response. He never
answers. We're not
going to
get a response, right?
He's having too much fun.
No, he doesn't. He didn't do that when he's like if he has just left the studio. Forget it. You can't get him.
Is he still in Augusta? Supposedly,
I don't know. That's what we need. We need to find out. I know
his tweets yesterday. Sort of sounded like farewell Augusta type tweet, so I don't know if he was leaving.
Well, he was only going for the one day to the par three contest. You know, I heard Jeff and Dancy tickets were being scalped for $3,000 yesterday.
It's unbelievable.
Is it worth it to see the rolling hills of Augusta's fairways, or would you pocket the $3,000?
Boy,
I'd pocket the $3,000, and it's so quick it'd make your head spin.
Yeah, I mean, I was heading down a couple weeks ago with my wife to see Federer. I mean, that was a big deal because she's a huge Federer fan.
$3,000 for Federer tickets, John. What are you doing?
No, we were capping it well below $3,000.
But if you had the tickets and you paid, let's say you paid $200 to go see Federer. Okay, I don't know what they cost, but let's say you paid $200 to go see Federer, and someone says, "I'll give you $3,000 for that
are
one
you
ticket."
Asking
I'm
me
asking you
solo.
No, I'm asking you. You and the wife have paid $400 for a pair of tickets to go see Roger Federer. Now you're getting $5,000 for the pair.
Oh, we're not selling them. If I'm wife influenced, we're not selling.
Are you kidding me?
If it's me.
Who manages the budget in the house?
Oh, shit. I mean,
$400 in one, $400 that I get to see Roger, or $5,000.
She manages the budget, but she manages everything.
I guess, man. All right.
I don't win that bad.
I'd be bringing home that $5,000. Got
it? I don't even fight the fight. I would too. I mean,
I was offered on Super Bowl day here in Jacksonville. It wasn't enough to get me to do, although at the time it was a lot more money. Out of my yearly earnings, but on the Super Bowl Sunday here, walking down to the stadium, wearing the ID around my neck, and it's a picture ID, you've got a barcode and everything,
right.
And a guy comes up, he goes, $1,000, I'll give you $1,000 right now, and he just fanned out $100 bills, and I thought, well, A, I'll never get to go to another Super Bowl again,
right.
Because they will revoke my privileges, and B, you won't even get in with this thing, you know?
Right.
People are just flashing cash. I don't know
in Indy, the famous championship game, 38-34, when the Colts came back and beat the Patriots, I had my company tickets, through the Colts, which I didn't even know what they were faced for, but I remember them going, and I didn't wouldn't have and couldn't sell them. As a team employee, you can't do that. But the offering price was, I mean, I think somebody offered like $3,000 a piece for
the
them.
Super
I
Bowl mean, tickets you're talking about.
Now. No, the AFC Championship
game. For the championship game. Okay.
Well, RCA Dome, very small, remember, $55,000. And it was Colts Patriots. It was Brady Manning.
So $3,000 a piece, you say?
I believe it was, if it wasn't $3,000 a piece, it was $3,000 for the two. I mean, it was enough
and
to wear
a significant chunk of money where you're thinking, wow, yeah, in normal circumstances.
I'm not saying I wasn't tempted, but I mean, obviously the rules are very strict and clear that you can't.
Oh, I get it, as a team employee.
Yeah, it's awful tempting. I mean,
I just wonder what
people
will
pay. And people were paying for that game a lot just because of the circumstance. I mean, that was not unusual.
What would Jag fans have to get to give? I mean, imagine it's been so long just to have a home playoff game, but imagine if they were hosting an AFC title game versus the Colts, right?
Sure.
Something like that. It'd be phenomenal. It would have to set you up for a while.
When we went to the Super Bowl, you know, 2 weeks after that, we each got, you each got one ticket and you could buy one for face. And if you bought one for face, it was like $600 or something.
Right.
And my brother-in-law bought one for face, you know, through me, went to the game. And boy, even $600. I mean, that's, I guess I'm just not used to, I've been in sports media for 30 years.
Right.
So to me, paying for a game, you know, it's just not in, I'm cheap anyway.
I am too, man.
But there's not very much. When we were thinking about the Federer tickets and we were trying to figure out how to get them, boy, once they went above about 100 apiece, my blood started recoiling.
Yeah.
And, you know,
that's why I'm thinking you would have ultimately found a way to make that $5,000 deal happen.
That's illegal, so I probably wouldn't have done that.
Is it illegal to scalp in Florida? I thought Florida was legal. Is it illegal or legal? Illegal? Fortune House says illegal. I thought they were changing that. No, that's not the case. Is that right?
No, can do.
You're positive of that?
No.
You're not. I'm gonna have to look that up. Have the Jags visited this week with their first round pick in this year's draft?
I can't believe they have.
Gotta believe so, right?
Now, unless they, if they trade back, you know, to 12 or 13, and there's Dodd or Lawson, who I don't think we're in. Then maybe, but if they stay at five, I can't believe they didn't.
Oh, right. They've covered all the bases and probably more than they needed to.
So, yeah.
Don't think that's happened.
No. Or Ezekiel Elliott or somebody, but no.
Who is off the board? Out of the prospective top 10 guys, is Tunsil off the board?
No, I don't, if they were in here this week, I don't think they were off the board.
I don't think Tunsil's off the board either.
No, I don't think so because at some point he's so good and considered such a, you know, quote, can't miss. And that's different than Jokel. Jokel really wasn't that kind of can't miss. He was the best player that year. But the comparison between those two, Tunsil, everything you hear is a better, more solid prospect. No, I don't think he's off the board. If they were in here, I don't think they're off the board.
And obviously, it would take a
very
unique
unlikely,
set of circumstances
right.
that he'd be available. But let's
and
just,
I'm not even sure if he was there. I'm not even sure that they would definitely take him if he was there. But to think that he's off the board, to think that it wouldn't be a chance, no, I don't think
I think if you saw something like, let's say, San Fran traded up to number one to get a quarterback, right? They take a quarterback, then Cleveland goes quarterback. So now you got two off the board. San Diego goes Jalen Ramsey, although they could easily go Tunsil in that situation. But let's say they went Ramsey, and then the Cowboys, not really needing Tunsil, went Miles Jack or Joey
right.
Bosa. That would be kind of the only way I could see Tunsil sliding.
You take
that
Tunsil
far.
Over Miles Jack.
I'm not saying you do.
Team needs. I don't. Yeah. You know, again, so much of this conversation, you know, we've said it over and over again. We have to assume in these conversations that Dave Caldwell believes the chalk. Meaning Dave Caldwell believes exactly what the overall consensus mindset is out there. And I don't know if that's the case.
We don't know that.
Yeah.
And buried in these many visits this week could be the guy who's really the apple of his eye.
Sure.
For
I mean,
we know.
DeForest Buckner was here. A lot of fans hate to hear that, but he was here, and he's a very talented, solid player. You know, so
Noah Spence was here as well, right? And Noah Spence, as some of these guys, certainly they're looking at, like, I can't imagine they take Robert Kendiche with the fifth pick or Noah Spence with the fifth pick.
There's scenarios, though, and I think I heard you talking about him before. If they trade back to 15, or if, you know, and that's Hayes' scenario, but if they trade back to any amount and then get a couple of second-round picks, then can you get back into 20? You're at 15, and then you're at a 22. Well, a lot more of these guys come into play.
Absolutely.
Than an Eli Apple and a you know, and a Noah Spence at 15 and 22, maybe. So much of the draft, remember, they can bring in 30 guys, and is it likely in 4 weeks you might look back and say, what were they bringing those guys in for? They weren't going to take those guys. But you have to be prepared. You can't get yourself into a situation where you are on the clock and you have an opportunity to trade back. What you don't want as a GM is say, I can't trade back because I don't know what I would do there. You know, you have to have your scenarios played out. And if you have to flip to a card that says 11 and 14, here's exactly what we would do. Yes, this is our scenario. And you can't come out of that draft room that day going, boy, if I had thought about that before, then I would have done X.
Sure.
So you cover all your bases.
John Osher here with us, Jaguars.com. By the way, Zach Johnson with a birdie just moved into a tie with your boy
Jordan Spieth.
Wiesberger at the top of the leaderboard. Spieth still one under par through five holes.
He's in it.
At Augusta. He's right there, baby. Blake Bortles went on NFL HQ yesterday on NFL Network. And
before he went on Jaguars.com Live.
Yes, he did. He was on .com Live, which we've discussed this week already. But one of the things he mentioned in that forum was he believes Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns represent the best pair of wide receivers in the league. And you hear that, and my initial thought is, he's talking to his guys. And I thought, all right, let me start going through the teams. How many would I really take in front of him? I don't think there's an NFC combo. Now, Julio Jones, better receiver than either one of these guys. But is Mohamed Sanu good enough to make that the best duo? I don't think so. You could argue Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb, right? But without Nelson, Randall Cobb was pretty pedestrian this year. And Nelson coming off an ACL, so you could put them aside if you want to. You look at Denver, maybe, Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. Thomas had a lot of drops last year. I think the Jets combo right now of Marshall and Decker for this year, I would probably take.
Yeah.
And outside of that, maybe Antonio
because
Brown.
Because Marshall's a really high level
I agree.
Every way.
Yeah. The
and A-Rob is too, but.
They had nine games last year in which they each scored a touchdown. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's highly productive. And then if Martavis Bryant were not suspended, I think Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant probably fit that bill.
I think Antonio Brown and me.
It would be get consideration, I think. But, I mean, you look how far they've come. Tyler brought up the depth chart from 2013, started training camp. Cecil Shorts, Mike Brown, top in the depth chart.
The fact that we're having the conversation is very significant.
It's great.
And the fact that even after that, the cupboard's not really bare. You've got Rashad Green and Marquise, who both of them have to do a lot more, but it wouldn't really shock anybody if after eight games we were talking about a trio in that. The talent is certainly there on both of those guys. You know, they've done it for 1 year, A-Rob and Hurns. And both of them would tell you, in order to get with the groups that we're talking about, they need to do it again. They need to show now that they can adapt to what teams will start doing to counter them. That's a big step they have to make this year. But the potential, there's no reason to think they won't, but we've got to see it.
Right. And again, we've discussed this quite a bit. The numbers may not be the same.
Right.
Just because, hey, you have a potentially full healthy season out of Julius Thomas drawing targets. You've got these other receivers you're talking about.
You almost hope that A-Rob's numbers, I know he doesn't hope this, but you almost hope that A-Rob's numbers maybe aren't quite the huge average that he had. There are things that you would like to see that are indicative of more consistent offenses, you know, such as some shorter passes working.
One of which is being able to run the ball in the fourth quarter, being able to be in a game situation
not
where you can.
Depend on those guys. You don't want to depend on those guys to have so many huge plays for you to be effective. But the fact that the conversation doesn't seem silly, which it would have a year ago, is really significant considering where this receiving core has been.
Let's go to our scalping update desk with the one and right, only we'll Joe Fortunato. Joe, what can you tell us about the scalping laws in the state of Florida, please, sir?
Florida statute number 817.36, dated 2015. A person or entity that offers for resale or resells any ticket may charge only $1 above the admission price charged by the original ticket seller.
Boo hiss. For some reason, they thought they changed that. And that's dated 2015. What was the...
Unless there's a barcode and it's a Super Bowl involved, Mike, then you're okay.
I'll sell you. You look, anything, you know, it's a cash only business.
So. Well, it's only illegal if you get caught, right?
Get hold of me off the air, please, ladies and gentlemen. I don't have any tickets to sell anyway. I don't know even know
what
we're talking about.
I can safely say I've never scalped because I am too scared.
Are you? You never even, like, never sold.
I'm letter of the law. I'm just
there. I used to, when I had Jag season tickets before, because I'd buy them and I don't need them necessarily because I'm going to the game to cover the game. And in down years, there were plenty of years where I couldn't give the tickets away. And I would come and try to sell them on game day just to recoup maybe 50% of the face value.
The only two tickets I think I've ever sold outside of an event, I sold Village People tickets when I was in the eighth grade.
And extras?
I wanted to go to the high school dance instead. Oh. And I sold Huey Lewis tickets because I wanted to go see Purple Rain instead.
I sold them both for face. How did you come upon the Village People tickets to begin with?
Oh, my mom bought them for me.
Did she?
I was going to see the are you kidding me?
How
old was I? I must have been eighth grade, ninth grade. Okay. So YMCA, baby.
Macho man.
But I'll admit, I probably didn't know what I would have been getting into at the time in the 70s with the Village People hardcore. Yeah, I don't know if I'd been ready for that.
You probably, it would have gone right over your head.
Yeah, I would have just been, hey,
because moms back then, they loved all the Village People on the Phil Donahue show.
I did not go.
Come in and look.
I went to the Episcopal High Middle School dance instead.
That's probably a wise choice. Yeah. Purple Rain. I mean, look, Huey Lewis, I got nothing against Huey Lewis. Purple Rain.
Probably wore my Grease t-shirt to the middle school dance.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Big Grease fan, were you?
It was bad.
I like Grease.
I was not always the cool guy you see before you today.
Oh, come on. It's cool to like what you like and not be affected by public opinion and discourse.
It wasn't cool, Mike.
No? All right. That's trying to build you up there. All right, Johnny O. 3 weeks out from the first day of the NFL draft, what do you have coming up over the next few days?
We're still living on the high having Blake Bortles on Jaguars.com.
I'll do
the weekend focus tomorrow. Breaking down a little bit about what Blake had to say, and I talked to Sendarek Marks last night about his participation in a financial camp, but he also talked a little bit about his thoughts on the defensive line, and he's excited about the depth and what they might be.
You know what? Speaking of which, camps and the like, this got me thinking. I got a tweet earlier from the Leon Washington Foundation. They're among many who are trying
He's a good guy, isn't he? I don't know him. Leon seems like a great guy.
Leon's the best. Yeah. He is such a good
guy.
Such a guy that gives a good name to the city of Jacksonville. His foundation is honoring the Revolt High School girls basketball team with their national championship, and he is going to have a nice, I don't think I'm spoiling it for anybody. They should be in school right now. He's going to show up. It's a press release. I'm going to tell you. He's going to show up, and the girls are going to get an all-expense-paid trip to Orlando where they're going to attend an Orlando Magic NBA game and have dinner on the Leon Washington Foundation. So,
well, girls have been dominant a long time.
How does that not, like, impact your eligibility, right?
What's that?
Someone wants to give you a trip to
You're a bad guy.
I'm just asking the question.
You're a bad guy. You and your Miami shirt.
Take it. You know what I would do if I were the Reebok girls? I would sell the tickets at Orlando Magic game for $2 over face value. What I would do. See you, Johnny.
All right, guys.
There he goes. John Osier, at John Osier on Twitter, and, of course, on the digital pages of Jaguars.com. Coming back, fan feedback spotlight today, asking you who are the three best wide receiver duos in the National Football League. And we figured you'd throw Hearns and Robinson in there at least once. So that's what we got. You know what else we got? We got Jordan Spieth. Another birdie! Tied for the lead at the Masters. Spieth. All right, there you have it. Early leaderboard, three-way tie at the top. Jordan Spieth, Zach Johnson, and Bernd Wiesberger are your leaders at Augusta National. Mike Dempsey here with you, Jaguars Today, coming back in a moment on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Blake, talk to us about Dante Fowler Jr., the third pick in the draft last year. How's his rehab been going? What do you see from him in 2016?
He's been awesome. He's been in here every day. You know, I've been in here. Most of the guys, it's kind of cool to have such a young team because guys, you know, they don't have off-season houses or families that, you know, go and live in other places. So majority of our core guys are here and working out all off-season. So it's been cool to watch him come in, you know, every single day and rehab and get better, get stronger, get faster, and get ready. So, you know, it'll kind of be like getting two first-round picks this year with him coming back as well. So I'm excited for him. I'm looking forward to watching him play and think he's going to be an unbelievable football player.
Now, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
That's Chris Canty with the question yesterday on NFL HQ to Blake Bortles. And as he said, he's very excited to see Dante Fowler working hard. And that's all we can go on right now. He's working hard, doing the right things. I've heard repeatedly he looks like he's in great shape. So let's hope he stays healthy and makes a big impact on the football field this season coming up. Tyler, I'm going to make an executive decision today. I'm going to suggest if people want to know who everyone nominated as the top wide receiver duos in the National Football League, in addition, obviously, to Hearns and Robinson, they can go to my Twitter timeline or the Jaguars Today Facebook page and read along today because we're running short on time. We've got a couple of callers in. We've also got a giveaway right now, so let's do that. Blake Bortles throwing out the first pitch tonight for the Jacksonville Suns season opener, the home opener against the Birmingham Barons. 7:05, first pitch, a little Thirsty Thursday action going on. If you'd like to attend that or some other Suns game of your choice, we've got a pair of Jacksonville Suns vouchers, good for any one game, subject to availability. All you need to do is be the third caller right now at 641-1010, and Tyler Devitt will hook you up with those tickets. I should have made it the 16th caller, Tyler, in honor of the 16-run outburst.
Well, we can still make the change. You want to go 16?
Yeah, let's go caller 3. I'll make
caller 3. Make it easy. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
We got a couple on the line, so let's get to Bernard on the south side before we get out of here today. Good morning, Bernard. You're on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
Hey, man. How you doing? Good to talk to you.
I'm great. You too, buddy.
Listen, I'm just curious about something I read yesterday with Ryan O'Halloran. I mean, I was reading up where he was evaluating the people who were coming into the building yesterday, and he had the little blurb on each one of them.
Yep,
what struck me as curious is that everyone is talking about Miles Jack. Now, don't get me wrong. I believe he's a heck of a football player. I've seen him play. But I'm very curious that we're talking about drafting someone in the first round who hasn't ran a 40 time. Come on, man. I mean, that's kind of like a standard, isn't it? Or either I'm just losing my mind on this thing. Because it just strikes me as strange that we put all of this emphasis on Miles Jack. We know he was hurt. We know he hasn't played since then. But not running for any NFL team? I found that is kind of strange, so I gave you a call to see what you think about it, and I'll take it off the air.
All right, thank you, Bernard. Appreciate it, buddy. Yeah, thank you for the call. Yeah, look, it is strange. We understand the circumstance, right? He was hurt. He did do some football drills at his pro day where he proclaimed himself to be about 80%. Then he wanted to have a follow-up individual workout day last Friday, April 1st, and that fell through. Now you're hearing he's going to go through the medical recheck in Indianapolis. This is for guys who had question marks on their medical reports at the combine. They go back to get rechecked, see where they're at. Are they making the proper progress? And that information gets disseminated to teams. And then his agent said, if that allows him time to get back up to speed, no pun intended, that maybe he'll do some workouts in between that time and the NFL draft. But we're getting short on days in there. I think it does present a risk factor. There's certainly that. But I think when you pop in the film on Miles Jack, as you're saying, you see the speed. That's one thing that doesn't seem to be in question with him. For his position, he has outstanding speed. You know, so look, if you're not comfortable in that position, unless you can see the guy work out, you're going to have to take that into consideration. You had the same situation, similar one with Todd Gurley last year. Tyler, I can't remember if Todd Gurley ran a 40 for anybody before the draft was held last year or not. I'm not 100% certain on that, but it was a similar type circumstance. You had to go on the film prior to the injury more so than anything else, and, you know, the medical people telling you at what stage his rehab was at. So, look, no question it's an obstacle to overcome in drafting him highly, but it's not an insurmountable one. I think, again, you go back to the tape and you say, this is something I don't have questions too much about, and that's Miles Jack's speed, if you presume that the knee injury that he had isn't going to permanently damage that going forward. And everything you hear about his workout at UCLA, doing the positional stuff, everyone said he looked fantastic, didn't look like it was going to be an issue. So ultimately, I think it will be something that somebody's going to swallow on and just go ahead and pull the trigger on. I don't think it's going to really hurt his draft stock.
I don't believe that Gurley ran the 40. I can't find any times for him at all.
Right. So there's an example. And he went 10th overall, which is high for a running back. And, you know, because you got to, go back to the film. Todd Gurley, you knew he was fast prior to the injury. Is he going to be fast after the injury? Well, you know, most people come back from ACLs nowadays. I think it was a meniscus, right, with Miles Jack, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
He should be fine. Should be fine. We got Philip in Oakland. Is Oakland, California, Philip calling in from right now?
West Coast.
All right. Philip on the West Coast. What's going on, man? How are you?
Hey, man, I'm doing well. Hope you guys are doing well. Awesome.
We're doing
man.
Fantastic.
I listen to you guys' show every day. I never catch the live ones, so I can never call in and chime in. But, man, it's good to hear from you guys, man. You guys do an awesome job. I've been a Jags fan from Oakland, California, man, my whole life since 95, man. My dad won a whole bunch of money in Reno. We stopped at a gas station. They had Carolina helmets, Jacksonville helmets. I did the eeny, meeny, miny, mo thing, landed on the Jags. Next thing you know, a year later, winning the AFC Championship game, I never turned back, man. Freaking love it.
All right, well, hey, I was going to ask you, how did you come by? And that's just, it was luck of the draw. And as long as you stick with them, man, we welcome you on board or continue to be on board. So what's your quick thought before we get out of here today on the Jags?
All right, man, my question for you guys is, before the draft, pre-draft, what do you guys feel and how do you guys feel about the state of our team right now, where we're at? I'll let you
all
guys
right.
take that. I'm doing
hey, thank you, man. Listen, we appreciate you listening out there, and don't be a stranger now that you got the number squared away. Philip out in Oakland checking in. I love to hear Jag fans spread out all across the country and different parts of the world, as we've had many callers on that score. Look, where things stand right now, I think they've done a decent job plugging holes. Certainly they didn't get that quote-unquote edge rusher in free agency, but they added good players, guys like Malik Jackson, guys like Tashaun Gibson and Prince Mukamara. Chris Ivory is going to help out. Calvin Beecham could be a major addition if he comes around help-wise. They've done a nice job plugging some holes. I think the offense is set to take off this year. Even with the state of the line last year, they scored a bunch of points, about a touchdown more than they did the prior season. Add 3, 4, 5 points to that total. Now you're pushing a top 5 offense in the league, and I think that's where their potential is for that side of the ball. And, you know, can they get consistent pressure on quarterbacks on third down is going to be the question. Look, even if they had signed Olivier Vernon, we'd feel great, but we couldn't know for sure. Olivier Vernon's had one double-digit sack season in the NFL. The Jags are going to be able to create that pass rush that we know they need. Only time's going to tell. We could sit here and say yes, no. I think it'll be better based on the additions. A healthier Cedric Marks coming back. Malik Jackson getting some push up the middle. A healthy Dante Fowler added to the mix and whatever else they do in the draft. But, you know, that's just projecting. They got to get it done on the football field. But, hey, listen, Philip, we appreciate the call. Don't be a stranger. And thanks for listening on a daily basis out there on the West Coast. Thanks to Mike DiRocco from ESPN, part of the NFL Nation coverage. He, of course, is your Jaguar beat reporter for ESPN. Appreciate him spending the first hour with us today. Give him a follow at ESPN DiRocco if you don't already. I assume most of you do who listen to Jaguars today. And thanks to John Osier from Jaguars.com for popping in as well. Hopefully David Garrard in tomorrow. Not 100% sure if that's the case. But either way, we will soldier on inside 3 weeks now. It's 3 weeks from today till the first round of the NFL draft. Tomorrow it'll be 3 weeks from rounds 2 and 3. So it's getting a little bit closer time after time. Get used to that sound. You're going to hear it a bunch in the upcoming days. Still tied at the top of the leaderboard, Zach Johnson, Jordan Spieth, now tied with Paul Casey in a 3-way tie at 2 under par.
Did you make your pick for the Masters? Who's your pick?
I took Jason Day in my fantasy league this year because Spieth hasn't been as sharp. This is the case where I'm going to go against form, where Tony says, once I turn in my bracket, I start rooting for upsets. On the opposite way for the NCAA tournament, I'm going to root for my bracket. In the NCAA tournament, I will root for Jordan Spieth because I want to see the next great American pile up majors. And I don't want to see 5 Americans win 4 or 5 majors. I'd like to see 1 or 2 guys, you know, make a Tiger-esque run. And Spieth is young enough and he's got a couple under his belt that he could do that. So I will absolutely root for Jordan Spieth to win it. Barring that, Bubba Watson, probably would be my next pick in terms of who I root for, but I picked Jason Day officially, based on my one and done fantasy league. What about you, Tyler Devitt?
I'm rooting for Bryson DeChambeau. I saw that feature he had with, Tom Rinaldi on, ESPN with his unique swing. And I'm all about that. It's very cool the way it's just very unique the way he does it. He's an amateur as well, right?
I believe you're correct. And I'm a guy with a, let's call it a quote unquote unique swing myself. So maybe I should be on your side of the fence. But I'm going with the front runners because I'm a big front runner. By the way, DeChambeau right now one under par. So he's only one shot off the lead. Had an early birdie, no bogeys on the card so far today. The boys will pick up the coverage of the Masters and much more XL Primetime coming your way with Joe C. Hacker and T-Wig. For Fat Tony, who'll be back with me next week, for Joe Fortunato, and of course for Tyler Devitt. Thanks again to Mike DiRocco and John Osier and all of you calling in today. And let's do it again tomorrow. Jaguars Today right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.